We're going to celebrate Christmas in July today because I love Christmas and I want to talk about a great movie. Show of hands, who's seen It's a Wonderful Life? Praise God. Okay, I was worried there was going to be less hands than that. If you didn't raise your hand, you have homework after Mass. Go home, watch a Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the best one out there. Maybe White Christmas competes with it. Unfortunately, if you haven't seen it, I'm going to give you a spoiler full overview before you get to watch it, but it's still worth watching. So if you haven't seen it, it follows the life of George Bailey. He has these great desires for wealth and influence and adventure. And throughout the course of the story, he's dragged always back into the responsibilities of supporting his family business and his hometown community. And he does so willingly, but still holding on to those other desires for something different, to travel the world. And after months of doing this, months turn to years, and years turn to decades, until George reaches a midlife crisis of sorts. And through the help of a curious angel named Clarence, he, in the midst of that crisis, is able to recognize that those youthful desires for greatness have already been fulfilled in the life that he's lived. I'll give a little bit of some mystery for those of you who haven't seen it as to how that happens. Through that intervention of Clarence, he learns, in fact, he did not need to become a world-class architect in London or an oil baron in Venezuela to become truly great. There's this beautiful scene, you know it if you've seen it, at the end of the movie, where he's showered with gratitude and love and money by his community that he's humbly served over the years. One by one, old friends and strangers, families he's helped put a roof over their head, or clients at his business come forward and help him in his moment of need. Though not a Christian movie per se, the story of It's a Wonderful Life taps into a deeply biblical truth. That is, in order to become truly great, we must first become small. In order to become truly great, we must become small. All through the Old Testament, God is raising up the unexpected person, the small, the insignificant, David, Jeremiah, Judith, the list goes on and on. The surprising person is made great. In the Gospels, Jesus took up that same pattern when he said, "The greatest among you must become your servant. And the first shall be last, and the last shall be first." Our mother Mary, she took up this same idea in her visits to Elizabeth, her great prayer of praise to God. It's called the Magnificat. She said, "He has lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things. And the rich he has sent away empty." This same idea is taken up today in two of our gospel parables. The mustard seed, the smallest of all the seeds, yeast particles of it, smaller yet. And yet, when given time to grow and the right conditions, the mustard seed, the yeast, they expand to an almost laughable size compared to their original condition. The small becomes truly great. And so for you, do you have desires for greatness? Good. You need those. God put those there for a reason. What is that for you? Let that wash over you today. Maybe it's becoming the top professor in your discipline, or the greatest athlete on your team, or maybe even in the country. Awesome. Maybe it's that wanderlust to travel the world and experience the richness of different cultures and beauty. All of that is placed in you by God to point you back to Himself and His greatness. But first, we must submit all of those desires to the desire for humility. Because in order to become truly great, you must first become small. And this doesn't mean that you need to become impotent or passive. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what Jesus invites you to. No, it's actually the opposite. Because humility enables you to harness an even greater power in life. Why? You tap into His power. Recognizing your neediness before God, that I have nothing if I am not given it by Him, allows you to rely on His great and infinite power. He put those desires for greatness in you. They're there for a reason, and He knows how they will be fulfilled. Let Him decide. Trust Him. You don't have to figure it out all on your own. He won't let you down. In the other parable in the gospel, the parable of the weeds and the wheat, He's reminding us that He is in charge. He wants you to hold on to those desires for justice. Yeah, the evil needs to be rooted out of our families, your world, our lives. He wants you to hold on to that desire to set things in order. They should be right. People should do things the way I think they should be done. Okay, good. And also, more fundamentally, desire His way. Let my mind, my heart, my way of seeing and doing things be your way of seeing and doing things, God. That is the fundamental desire. George Bailey probably could have saved himself a lot of frustration and heartache by loosening his grip on life a little bit and trusting God would provide in the ordinary day to day. So too for you. Don't let go of those desires for greatness. Instead, let go of the need for you to decide how they get fulfilled. Trust God and His love and care for you. Let yourself become small, a little one before Him. Let yourself be taken care of Him, and you will become truly great.